Today we have with us my very dear school friend Dennis. He is going to sing some chants for us. My earliest memories, Dennis, are when we were in the first standard maybe, and you would come home and I don't know what we would do, coloring books or crosswords, inane stuff. Dennis was the poster boy, how everyone should be, all-rounder, everyone's pet. I mean, I think there was nobody who didn't like him. Really, we all looked up to him. And some relationships stay. Parsi Baba. Do you all know the story of the Parsis and how they came? I'll tell you all. This is what I read. When the Muslim invasion of Persia took place, apparently in connivance with the Zoroastrian priests. Yeah. Who betrayed their people and allowed this to happen. Many of them fled to India and they reached the port of Sanjan. Now the king of Sanjan at that time was Jadavji Rana, very astute, noble king. And he realized he has a problem on his hands because he can't take more people into his kingdom. So what he did is, through his emissary, he sent a bowl full of milk, filled right till the top. There was no room for anything more. A subtle message that my bowl is full. Now, there was a Parsi called Meher Dastur Rana, part of the group which had come. And the Parsis huddled together and were trying to, they got the message. But what could they do now? Of course, they really appreciated this subtlety, this subtle action which the noble king made. So Meher Dastur Rana came up with a plan. He took sugar, powdered it, and put it in the bowl, and then sprinkled a few rose petals on it, and they sent it back to the king. The message was simple. By our presence, we will sweeten your experience. We won't be a burden. And with the rose petals, our presence will be a fragrant one. We will be light as petals. And that is how they came in. What a beautiful story that is. And the Parsis, as we know, have excelled in so many fields. Doctors, lawyers, industrialists. Immense contribution. What is our relationship with people? Is it sweet and harmonious? Is it bittersweet? Or is it generally sour? All those we meet on the journey of life, all those who meet us, or is ours that when people are nice to us and praise us, we are very good with them? And when something turns, we turn, which will continue all one's life. Dennis, can you play something for us?
Sure.
Just to begin the satsang.
So, thanks for having me.
Our privilege.
I'll just do a small chant. It's called Ram Krishna Hare Mukunda Murare Panduranga 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 Hare. So I found chanting to be almost a miraculous practice for me over the years. I was into music in school and had many rock bands, and suddenly had this realization at one point that that chanting was bringing me great bliss. So that's how I got into chanting. I just chant for myself. I don't perform much. Gautam invited, so I said, let's go.
Ram Krishna Hare. Ram Krishna Hare. Mukunda Murare. Krishna Krishna Hare, Mukunda Murare, Rama Krishna Hare, Mukunda Murare, Panduranga. Panduranga, Panduranga Hare, Panduranga, Panduranga, Panduranga Hare, Panduranga, Panduranga, Panduranga Rama Krishna Hare, Rama Krishna Hare, Rama Krishna Hare. Wise men say only fools rush in. I can't tell, giving my life to you. Shall I stay? Would it be a sin? And I can't tell, giving my life to you. Panduranga, Panduranga, Panduranga Hare, Panduranga, Panduranga, Panduranga.
You see, that's the thing, chanting. What is the chant which goes on in our minds all the time? If we just introspect, what is our repeated thinking which is going on? That is our chant. Is that chant an opposition to life? Is that chant a me versus the other? Is that chant malice, ill will, spite, because I feel I have been wronged, jealousy? Or perhaps is that pride or arrogance, hatred, maybe guilt, maybe shame? Any process of thinking which is repetitive is our chant. I had a very interesting talk with someone a week ago. I had written an article maybe 15 years ago called Clearing the Clutter, which was about your environment. Removing useless things, things you haven't worn for a couple of years but are still there. Objects which have no value for the person you are today, but may have value for who you were 10 years ago. That was the gist of the article. And she informed me that now there's something very famous called Swedish death cleaning. Swedish death cleaning. This concept is, imagine you are no more, and all that stuff which is lying in your house and in your room, someone else has to dispose of. Can you imagine the nightmare they'll go through clearing your rubbish? So this process is to do it while you're alive. Clear it out. Act as if you won't be there. What has true value for you? What has true meaning for you? Keep that. Don't hoard. Don't get attached to objects and so on and so forth. And as I say, as within, so without. When your environment gets cleared, external, the reflection is back in the internal. As within, so without. And this glorious teaching of Advaita goes many steps further. I think one can call it Advaita death cleaning. Because the garbage in your mind, he said this, she said this, he did this to me, she did that to me. This mess of relationships we create for ourselves, especially the people we don't get along with in life, maybe our siblings, parents, children, friends, whatever it be. This is garbage of the thinking mind. This teaching cleans out that garbage. It is an internal cleaning, so that what is left is nothing but being here, present, available to the person in front of me, listening totally to them, understanding they are an expression of the same God who created me. Some I may like, some I may not like, so be it. But I don't lose this recognition that the person who is taking away my peace has been conditioned by factors beyond their control. And obviously that person feels I'm saying the right thing because it is based on their genetics, their nature, their conditioning, which God created. So I no longer play this game of right and wrong. The game itself is given up. And I live my life by and by. I take each day as it comes. I am not lost in the dead past anymore. You see, it's very interesting what happens. When we are young, we are building up memories. They are new, fresh experiences. That's how life begins. Then we don't realize it as we grow older, that this stock of memories starts becoming a burden. Why? Because now we are living in the past. This happened to me and that happened to me. We've been conditioned by experiences and the memory becomes a burden because we now view life through that burden of memory. When we were young, there wasn't much stock. Let's say when we are 15 years old, it's fresh stock. But when we are 35, 50, we have accumulated that memory on the basis of which we have started acting and speaking. How my childhood friends, school friends behaved with me, acted with me. My siblings, some I didn't get along with, some I didn't. Then what we don't realize is we get lost in stories of the past. If you find that you're always repeating stories from the past, many people repeat stories. This happened to me. I lost that much money in that incident. This person in school was very rude to me, very mean to me. And I keep on repeating the stories of the past without realizing I'm no longer that young boy or girl. I'm now 20 years ahead. So if we find we are constantly repeating stories of the past, it means we are not at peace. It means we got so identified with the dead past that we are staying in it. The sage does not suffer from this disease. A memory may come up. A memory may surely come up. But there will be no involvement in that thought and this whole dialogue of this person did this, this person said this, therefore I stopped talking to him. All that is finished for the sage. So how much are we reviving and living in the dead past is an indicator of how much we are at peace. The more we have indulged in it, the more it is clear we are not in the present moment. And as we grow older, we don't realize that our future is shrinking. When we are 15 years old, like this boy, there's a big future ahead. But when we are 50, that future is shrinking. There's less time now. So are you going to, till the end of your life, carry your grudges and resentments? My spouse did this to me, behaved like this to me. You can carry it till your last breath. Or does one have the total acceptance of the will of God, the one force behind all that has happened in my life? Sometimes good, sometimes not good. Sometimes pleasure, sometimes pain. Do I stand in the middle path of the Buddha, or will I constantly be polarized at one extreme and create suffering for myself as well as the people I am with? With this understanding, life is no longer a battle. I am not here to prove my point, to prove I am right. I am no longer here to force my view on someone. I now immediately understand, maybe once I express myself, perhaps twice, then I leave it. My job to convince others is over. What is meant to happen will happen. It's written in the Gita. Because I may be making a grave mistake by trying to convince someone, because I have assumed I know what's right. That is a big assumption. You may find some tremendous changes taking place. What you didn't say before, you might just start saying. For example, the friend you didn't get along with in the group, or one of the siblings, you may say, hey, let's go for a cup of coffee. And then over a conversation, you might say, you know, I just want you to know what you said then had hurt me. You will become more expressive, because now your guns are not trained on the other person. Now you have seen everyone is playing their role. So you are honoring the person for being the way they are, and you are expressing yourself, which perhaps because you were angry or irritated, you would not do so earlier. And you say, hey, let's just enjoy a cup of coffee and just share, be light, talk about it, without us trying to prove who's right, who's wrong. You're just sharing, and you find you start meaning well for even those who have troubled you, because you do realize everyone is facing their own challenges. They're all different for different people, but everyone is facing their own challenges. That sensitivity starts coming in. That's what happens. You realize that just because someone doesn't have your point of view, doesn't mean you have to stop liking them. That is a realization which comes. And your mantra becomes, all right, so be it, so be it. People are designed to be extroverted. Some people are designed to be introverted. Some people are both. I think the name is ambivert. They're designed that way. First is their innate nature, the life experiences they had. The problem is when the introvert tries to become an extrovert, too much doership sets in them. I must be like that. Not how God made me, like that. Because only then will I survive. These dialogues start comparing and judging. It's not possible. Now, I was quiet by nature in school, as Dennis will know. And he was very vibrant. I was going through my files, because in one essay I wrote that when in the third standard, I was given a white card. You know, we would get white cards for proficiency in subjects. And in one class, I was given a white card for being the most well-behaved boy in class. I said, ye kya ho gaya? I didn't even do anything and I got this white card. And then I went through my file, and in 3 years, I got this white card. Being good in geography and the most well-behaved boy. Being good in history and the most well-behaved boy. And it confused me, actually, because there was no attempt to be well-behaved. Just like there's no attempt to be naughty. We have a friend, Parsi friend Xerxes. He used to be thrown out all the time. And he was so mischievous that once he was thrown out and the boy sitting next to him was thrown out. And they made such a ruckus outside that the teacher called them back in. That was his nature. That is the nature. But we want people to conform. That is the problem. We want people to conform. Once I was in Kashmir and I met someone, Sufi mystic. I was sitting with him. I didn't know him too well, but we kind of had an instant rapport. And someone walked in. So under his breath, he whispered to me, Badmash aa gaya. And he dealt with the person, they said, spoke in their language, and that person left. And then he told me, he said, no matter who comes in, good person or badmash, 2 thoughts arise. One is, it is God's will they entered my home. 2, I tell myself, this person has far more better qualities than I have. no matter who steps in, the will of God has brought him to me, and this person has far more better qualities than I. I wanted to read out something that Ramana Maharshi has said on this concept of doership, non-doership, and action and reaction. Can't get clearer than him. So this is someone called T.P. Ramchandra, who was a devotee of Bhagwan, and this is what he said, what Bhagwan told him. So the person narrating it asked him a question, and he said, the question was, how can I give up the sense of being the actor? I am the actor. This book is written by Ganesan, who is the grandnephew. Is it grandnephew or great-grandnephew? Anyway, it's written by him. Very clear. How can I give up the sense of being the actor? I am the actor. TPR explained, I too asked Bhagwan this. Bhagwan showed two practical ways of erasing the importance given to the actor. One is by not reacting to the action that takes place around you. One should act but not react. The other is to understand totally and experientially that things and actions happen through you and not by you. It is being done by a higher power. Actions, whether good or bad, are being done through you and not by you. Reaction is mental work. The mind always binds us to the action. If you do not react to the action, then it dies. So this is a very important distinction between action and reaction. React. When we find that we react to someone, what they've said to us, what they've done, what you could call a knee-jerk reaction, we are repeatedly acting out the same way we have acted in the past, so we are reacting. That is mental work, as Bhagwan says. Why? Because we are acting on past patterns. People are pushing our buttons like they've pushed since a long time. So we don't act, which means respond. We don't respond to what is said. We react to what is said. We react based on our conditioning, based on our history with that person. You will find that most of your reactions are with people you've known for a long time. If you meet someone new, that backstory is not there as such, unless you have some innate patterns. So with the people we know, with the people we take for granted, we always have people in our life, the gentler ones, the quiet ones, whom we bring out our nonsense on, because we know that they won't give it back to us. Most of us have such a person in our lives. So we find we are always reacting. That same friend or that same sibling who said something 20 years ago and says, again we react. We can't help it also. One can see through this journey of awareness how helpless we are. The intent is not to react. That is what the spiritual journey is about. Someone who is unaware will not even have that intent, perhaps. Someone who is there will have, but cannot stop it. Why? Because of past conditioning being so strong. But the awareness is there. The awareness is that I wish this reaction didn't happen again and again. That also is a starting point. Because earlier even that awareness was not there. Now it is there. But then we consider ourselves a failure. The ego says, oh, I reacted again, I failed. The whole point is you didn't fail because your actions and reactions were never in your control. It was shaped by what happened around you. Now you want to take control of everything and determine outcomes. No, just let it be. Okay, it happened again. I wish it hadn't. So be it. Maybe that higher force which brought to me an awareness of my patterns, my shortcomings, whatever it be, I have to trust that to take me forward. So I become gentler on myself also. It's no longer an exam to pass that I should stop reacting. We are human beings. It's going to happen. Then what happens if I find myself reacting? I may say sorry to the person. I didn't mean to. I honestly didn't mean to, but it still happened. Earlier I wouldn't say it. That can happen. So things change. There's a realignment which happens, and it's very subtle. It doesn't get noticed immediately, but it does change when one is on the path. There's no option. Sometimes people say, most of my relationships are sorted out. 90% I've accepted, absorbed the teaching, and my life is 90% at peace now. But that one person, I just can't get around to accepting what this person does. I mean, this person has given me too much pain. How can I accept? How can I love such a person? And Joel Goldsmith gave a very beautiful solution to that. It happened to him once. On his initial journey, he said, God, I have sorted everything out. But these people, I can't get myself to love them. No matter what, I've tried my best. And then the next thought that arose was, he said, I just realized. And I told myself, all right, God, I can't love them. That is decided. I give up. So, the only option is that you love them through me. I can't do it. There's too much backstory. I can't do it. The only option is you love them through me. So you're freed of that burden. This is Advaita death cleaning. Clean slate. Firstly, we are stuck in this role of actors. Take a movie or take a play where everyone is assigned their role, which we have forgotten. We have forgotten everyone has been assigned their role. And the Maya is so strong that we believe the individual is the role. So that first curtain of Maya is well established. We have forgotten that there's a director, there's a script writer. A director is directing the hero and a director is directing the villain. That has gone out from the consciousness. And then we have forgotten that the director has been assigned the role of director, script writer has been assigned the role of script writer, each actor has been assigned the role. Now when we remember that, second curtain is lifted. And then when we realize without the screen of the TV or the cinema, we would not be able to watch the movie. And what is that screen? The screen of consciousness. Then the third curtain is lifted. Because in deep sleep, there is no movie to watch. Then these become your mantras every day. Something unpleasant happens. This too shall pass. Someone says something. Nobody is the doer of their actions. Something takes you by surprise. Thy will be done. This is a vibration. When he sings, when he chants and he says the bliss he experiences and he gets lost in it, it's a vibration. At the end of the day, it's a vibration, a sacred vibration. Your whole life and daily living gets recalibrated. It's like everything is reset and you start viewing the events of the day in a different perspective. What a great gift that is. And next time you may find that person who antagonizes you is seeing something and you just smile. It will antagonize that person even more. But you may just find, my God, I'm no longer playing this game. I'm no longer stuck in this action-reaction loop like I was. Before the satsang, I was sharing with Dennis how some school teachers, I think in today's words, you could say traumatized us. I don't know if youngsters face that, but I think today it would be outlawed, you know. One of them would hit us with that plastic ruler here, pat, like that. No matter what you did, she would punish the whole class. So I was like, what have I done? Whole class was punished. And one, we all feared a lot when his class, I thought I was the only timid one, but I realized that I spoke to school friends, everyone feared him. It was fear with a capital F. But now what is the realization? Today this behavior may not be tolerated, but I really thought this teacher who traumatized us, what trauma he must have faced in his childhood, I don't know. To become a person like that must be taking some very serious events in one's life to bring it out on children. That thought would have never arisen in school. And I was so grateful when I met my teacher that I could see people in this dimension, that this man couldn't help being himself. Unfortunately for us, the system was set up in those days, perhaps you could say the level of awareness was not there, that these things were allowed to happen. But do you see the sense of objectivity and neutrality which comes into looking at people and their behavior? If that comes in early on in life, it makes life so much simpler. When you realize everybody in life is not here to please you, nobody has given you that guarantee, then you are more accepting. Would anyone like to share anything or ask anything?
Yeah.
Yes, Agastya.
Yeah. So my question was, our ultimate goal is to attain salvation, right? And be with God. So during the process, why did God create the duality in the first place?
Better ask him this very good question.
Why create the world? Because instead of that, because the duality of pleasure and pain has been created, people, instead of trying to achieve salvation, are trying to achieve their own personal pleasures, and they are being drawn further away from that. So why did the Maya have to be created?
I can answer this question. But one thing you must realize is that there will be no end to these questions.
Yes.
What will happen is that these questions will start dropping away. You see, consciousness at rest is unaware of itself because there's nothing else. Consciousness at rest is unaware of itself. And what is potential is going to by nature be potential, otherwise it would be dead matter. It is not dead as we know it. So this potentiality has to be actualized sometime. So consciousness unaware of itself as consciousness becomes aware of itself as I am. Otherwise, no Maya. So this is the first step. How does it get to know itself if there's nothing else? It can only know itself in this way, as I am, I exist. But this is the primary Maya. Then what happens? The I am becomes, I am Agastya, I am Gautam, I am Dennis. The I am becomes the me. And the journey back is the realization that what we see, which we thought was external to us, different people, different objects. Now we realize what is called unity consciousness, which means that the manifestation is not apart from consciousness. It can't be, otherwise there would be two sources. There's only one source. The manifestation is a reflection of the source within itself. Now this realization can only happen in this realm of duality. That is why Advaita, Advait, means not two, not two. So, I agree with you completely. Why did God take all this trouble? Best is if consciousness was not aware of itself. None of this would happen. But that is not its nature. Its nature is to realize. That is why do you think yogis engage in practices where they are trying to unite with the consciousness, Shiva, Shakti, the energy, they go through their processes for that. Now what happens to us, mundane people in the mundane world, who have got lost in the Maya and have converted the basic structure of life, which is duality, we have got so lost that we've converted it to dualism, which means what was a basic me and the other has become me versus the other. What was a basic understanding that life means pleasure one moment, pain the next. We want only pleasure. So we have got so lost in this that we have created suffering for ourselves and for our loved ones. Now the journey is to heal back into the understanding that this is the nature of life, which is duality. This is the framework which has been given on this plane. And when I realize that being polarized, being too strongly identified with certain opinions, judgments, thoughts, and all is creating suffering for myself, I start giving that game up. So I'm being healed back to my original nature. I'm being healed back because the separation became so strong as it seeped into my life that now it's the journey back to this basic understanding. Now what happens? Because I have this awareness, I am able to deal with life better. I am able to be more at peace with what is, peace with people, peace with what events happen in my life. Earlier, I was so lost in it that I was suffering. There's a shop in Srinagar called Suffering Moses. My shop is suffering. Yeah, it's called Suffering Moses. I don't know why, but it's called that. Most exquisite handicrafts they make. Very expensive, very beautiful, but Suffering Moses. So, I now have this understanding, someone as young as you, that life is unpredictable, that my own experience has shown me. All I can do is my best, thereafter God's will. So this understanding of why did God do this, why did God create handicapped children? My teacher would be asked this question, what harm have they done? Why make them suffer? And my teacher would reply that why don't you ask why did God create healthy children? You see, we are taking that polarity for granted. But when we understand this nature of duality, it doesn't mean we are being insensitive. It means we feel pain when we see someone with a disability, but we accept that this is the will of God. Because if we don't accept it, we are creating suffering. Now, after accepting this is the will of God, we decide what can we do for such a person? Can we do anything at all? And then we go ahead in life. So we accept this limitation, this structure, because we have seen it at play. We have seen it at play. That is what happens. And then, as Rameshji would say, a painting can never know why its painter painted it. How will you ever know? God has painted a beautiful painting. Painting is not going to know the will of God. We want to know the will of God. The mind wants to know. It is structured that way. As he would be asked, I can understand God created Ramakrishna Paramhans, God created Mother Teresa, but I cannot understand how he created Hitler. Can't understand it. Doesn't make sense to the rational mind. And Rameshji would say, look, there is only one source. Because if something was created by another power, that means there's a power greater than God. Then who created that power? You see, this is the gift of Advaita. God and devil is just two polarities. The source is one. Manifestations are many. And in a given situation, each person decides what has to be done. And that is how the allies came together to defeat Hitler. So that is the game of life. Same with the Mahabharata. What kind of sane God could create these kind of people is the question. So are we implying God is insane? Yes, it doesn't make sense. So much of life does not make sense. But when we give up trying to make sense of life, we are at peace. Yet, it does not mean we don't do anything. If we see something wrong is being done and we feel like stepping in, we step in. But we don't question the game of life anymore. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Anyone else? Now what are you doing? Which class are you in? I forget.
It's one in Parla, Villaparle called Mindsetters.
Mindsetters. So, it's a school, college.
Yeah, class that is associated with the college.
Mindsetters. So this teaching annihilates the thinking mind, which is in the dead past or an imaginary future. And when that is annihilated, the working mind functions in its pristine purity. So a situation comes in front of you tomorrow. Because you're no longer engaged in the drama, you are seeing it for what it is, which means your working mind is dealing with the present situation. So this is mind setting.
I want to know, in all this, where does forgiveness come?
Well, my teacher would say that the question of forgiveness is as irrelevant as legs on a snake. Because who is to forgive whom for what? You see, yes, it is an important step, you could say, in one's process of thinking, where someone does something and I say, I forgive him. But the problem with that is, who am I to forgive? I forgive? Who gave me that right? That is why when we see nobody is the doer of their actions, the question of forgiveness itself does not arise. That is why Jesus on the cross didn't say, I forgive them, for they know not what they do. He said, Lord, forgive them, for they know not what they do. He didn't say, I forgive them. So for him, this whole concept of forgiveness was irrelevant. Everyone has to be forgiven, including yourself in that case, because we are not the doers. And that is why he would say, true forgiveness is forgiving yourself for wanting to forgive someone else for something they are supposed to have done. And I forgive. I am that important that I can forgive. When I have the total acceptance of God's will and there is total surrender, the question of forgiveness is irrelevant. So I choose whom all to forgive in my life and whom not to forgive based on what they have done. What forgiveness is that?
So the fact what you said, that you realized that the act what was done was wrong when you were young.
So from your perspective.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that acceptance is enough.
Yes. The question of forgiveness is irrelevant because I've accepted it was meant to happen, it happened. Otherwise, it would not have happened. So I've accepted it as the will of God. Of course, to me, that seems wrong because that is my view. But beyond that, what? That's it. Then, that is what we were talking about. Then I'm no longer stuck in this game of duality and converting it into dualism. This total cut in the thinking process. It is actually very freeing. This teaching is very freeing. Dennis, people are getting bored with these talks. I think we need your singing.
It's almost like a meditation. Your talk.
Let's have some singing.
One more chant?
Yeah, yeah. What do you say, guys?
Yes.
Are you up for it? Maybe they'll start sending me mails that your talks are too boring. Please call Dennis back.
Let's do a Shiv one.
Feel free to sing along, yeah?
So the chant is Jai Jai Shiv Shambho, Jai Jai Shiv Shambho, Mahadeva Shambho, Mahadeva Shambho. And then we'll see where it goes.
Jai Jai Shiv Shambho, Jai Jai Shiv Shambho, Jai Jai Shiv Shambho, Jai Jai Shiv Shambho, Mahadeva Shambho, Mahadeva Shambho, Mahadeva Shambho, Mahadeva Shambho, Jaya Jaya Shiva Shambho, Jaya Jaya Shiva Shambho, Jaya Jaya Shiva Shambho, Jaya Jaya Shiva Shambho, Mahadeva Shambho, Mahadeva Shambho, Mahadeva Shambho, Mahadeva Shambho.
Professional. One more, then we...
One more.
What about that, you had sung Come By Here Lord once, remember?
Let's see.
Yeah.
This went a little high in one part.
Makes you high? You know, I was thinking, if you were there, you would not have put sugar in that bowl, you would have probably put some bhang and sent it.
Yes, we are from Vitisna, right? But we want to meet Shiva, so we come here. So this is a nice hymn which I learned in school actually. And I always loved it. I'll see if I can sing it with a chant, but we'll start with the hymn.
We are praying, Lord, come by here. We are praying, Lord, come by here. We are praying, Lord, come by here. Oh, singing, Lord, come by here. We are singing, Lord, oh, come by here. Oh, we are bringing love, come by here. Oh, Lord. Say, oh, Lord, and I say, oh,
come by him. Namo Bhagavate Tarandaye. Namo Bhagavate Tarandaye. Om Namo Bhagavate Muktanandaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Muktanandaya. Namo Bhagavate Tarandaye. Bingo. Yeah, bring love, come by here. Oh, yeah, bring love, come by here. Oh, love. And I said, oh.
Thank you.